This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program. We're going to be talking today about college choices. It's the Christmas season, but let me tell you, I'm getting a flood of contacts, emails, questions coming from parents and students, college students, but especially high school students saying, well, what now? The economy has changed. You've got a crisis in the economy that's leading many families to have to rethink the college question. And there are a lot of colleges and universities that are having to rethink their own financial structure, including tuition fees and all the rest. I come to this with a unique perspective, perhaps, being a college and seminary president, and at the same time being first concerned with how Christians should think about higher education. The economics do play a part. And here are a couple of things I want us to talk about today. And I hope perhaps this conversation can be of help to some families thinking about this, some perhaps thinking ahead. In one sense, this is not the make or break question you may think that it is. In other words, there is kind of a reflex in this society right now that says if a student doesn't go to exactly the right school, they're going to be a failure in life. They're going to be professionally and personally harmed for life. I'm going to suggest to you that this decision needs to be put into a very carefully constructed context in which you understand it is very important. But it is not the make or break issue. It is not the kind of issue where you can instantly make a mistake and everything is lost. It is not the case that you have to go to school A, B, or C, or you're simply just toast for the rest of your life. That's an incredible amount of pressure for anyone to bear, especially for a young person to bear. And it's an incredible amount of pressure for parents to bear at a time when some of the choices in higher education are, like it or not, going to be financially defined as well as driven by other issues. We're going to talk about it today. I'm going to suggest to you some alternatives for your thinking. And I want you to join the conversation. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to that issue in just a moment. Folks, the headlines have been all over the place today. The center of gravity in today's news is not the presidential administration coming in with President-elect Barack Obama. It's not the presidential administration going out with the incumbent George W. Bush. It is instead in Illinois, where Governor Rod R. Blagojevich has been arrested by federal authorities and charged with corruption, including, according to the New York Times release, an allegation that he conspired to profit from his authority to appoint President-elect Barack Obama's successor in the United States Senate. Now, as this story has unfolded, perhaps some of you have seen the press conferences held during the day. It right now is just about the lead story on every one of the cable news networks, and for good reason. You're talking here about a sitting governor. Now, let's just put this in a little bit of context. What in the world is going on in Illinois? Governor Blagojevich was elected as a reformer after the previous governor, Governor Ryan, had already been convicted of fraud and racketeering and sent to the federal prison. So we're talking two in a row here in two different parties. George Ryan was convicted of racketeering and fraud in 2006. He went out of office in 2002 under a shadow of that prosecution. Now we're looking at Governor Blagojevich, and folks, if you've been listening to this stuff, it's like it was written for Hollywood. It's just that bizarre. You're talking about wiretaps here on the governor. You hear the governor's voice basically shaking down people for money and perks, including jobs for his wife and all the rest, in order to gain his appointment to the United States Senate. According to the Illinois Constitution, the governor of Illinois has the sole unquestioned authority to fill that seat. And with the election of Senator Barack Obama to the presidency, this is going to fall to Governor Blagojevich. And what we're talking about now is the fact that even under these circumstances, even as he has now been arrested by federal authorities and charged with corruption, he is still the only person who has the right to fill that office of the United States Senate, the seat open now from Illinois. Now, as the wiretaps reveal the conversation, Governor Blagojevich is heard to be shaking down one person by saying, quote, I want to make money, and then demanding as much as $250,000 to $300,000 a year. Patrick Fitzgerald, the prosecutor, said Governor Blagojevich, quote, put a for sale sign on the naming of a United States senator. Mr. Blagojevich said, and by the way, according to this, he contemplated appointing himself to the Senate. He said, quote, I'm going to keep this Senate option for me a real possibility, you know, and therefore I can drive a hard bargain. You hear what I'm saying? And if I don't get what I want and I'm not satisfied with it, then I'll just take the Senate seat myself. According, and this is again the New York Times summary, according to the affidavit from prosecutors, Mr. Blagojevich told an advisor last week that he might, quote, get some money up front maybe from one of the candidates hoping to replace Mr. Obama. That person was identified only as candidate 5. According to the conversation, and there were many of them that were taped, in one of these, Mr. Blagojevich said he was approached by an associate of this candidate, identified as candidate 5, with an offer of $500,000 in exchange for the Senate seat. All right, it's going to be fascinating to see where this goes because, well, this is going right back to Genesis 3. I mean, as Christians look at this, the first thought we probably have is the same thought as everyone else. This is one of the stupidest things imaginable. And, of course, we all have to say that until he is proven guilty, he has the presumption of innocence before the court. But in the court of public opinion, when you start airing the kind of recordings that the people have been hearing today, it's pretty clear that when the federal authorities brought this indictment and arrested a sitting governor, they did so on very good reason. And the second thought, after thinking about how stupid this is thinking about how evil it is. And after thinking that, you have to realize that this man has been elected to one of the top political posts in this nation. Being the governor of Illinois is a very significant political post. And once one has held that position, you can be pretty assured that other positions are going to open to you in the private sector or in the public sector, you know, as this follows. But that's not good enough. Evidently, it was not good enough for Governor Blagojevich. He has been mentioned on this program, by the way, because he, a Democratic governor there in Illinois, has gone after the conscience clause. That's why I've talked about him on this program before. He's gone after the conscience clause of physicians and pharmacists on the abortion question. And with pharmacists, I believe it was RU486 or the morning after pill. So when we're looking at this governor, we're looking at someone who has decided to milk his office for all that it's worth and the appointive power that now comes to him. And again, we as Christians looking at this, we have to look at it with biblically informed eyes. And that means when we look at this, we're not thinking of it merely in terms of politics and the law and the psychology of it. We're looking at the theology of it. And what's the theology of this? Here we have the incredible sinfulness of sin. That's what one of the greatest of the Puritans called it. Sin is so powerful. It is so deadly a reality. It is so self-deceptive that it and it alone explains how, for instance, a sitting president of the United States can have an affair with an intern in the Oval Office. It explains how a sitting president of the United States can involve himself in a conspiracy to obstruct justice, as did President Nixon. It explains how a sitting governor here can be the second in the row in the same state for using his office for the purpose of fraud and a shakedown and racketeering. Now, the people of Illinois obviously deserve better, but let's just remember, we have the government we deserve. That's a basic principle in an elective system of government. We have the system we deserve. And the reality, as many of the major news media have been talking today, is that the state of Illinois has looked the other way, or at least many of the authorities have looked the other way, at endemic corruption. And when you have endemic corruption in your political system, you really can't be surprised that your governor is shaking down folks who might be interested in an appointment to the United States Senate. Well, we'll be following that story along with the rest of you, and I guarantee you the news media is going to be on this, and I can tell you the news angle on this is very clear. It's not only about the governor, it's about these candidates, about the representatives of the candidates who supposedly are now on these wiretaps making an offer of buying the Senate seat. This could reach names very famous and well-known, but we're going to have to wait and see who those names might be as they might appear in the news in days ahead. I can guarantee you this, there's no way this kind of 76-page affidavit and all the indictments is going to go very far without having to name the people who are involved. They themselves could become other indicted persons through this process, or they could become unindicted co-conspirators, or they could become witnesses for either the prosecution or the defense. Yesterday we talked about Lisa Miller's cover story in Newsweek magazine. It is, as I described it, an atrocity. I'll be talking about it more in the media later this week. We'll be giving you updates on that. However, Newsweek magazine's blog is out. It mentions my article, and it's another attempt to more or less defend the article. I'll tell you, I'm pleased by the fact that there has been an incredible outrage that has been expressed about Lisa Miller's article. It's entitled A Religious Case for Gay Marriage. You can find my article in response to hers at albertmuller.com. You can then go from the link in my article directly to her article, but as you're looking at this, let's just face the fact that this is going to be an ongoing conversation, and the fact that this is the cover story in Newsweek magazine, it tells us a great deal about what really might lie very quickly ahead. We're going to see the shape of the argument out before us. You'll find more about this in the media, and I'll be talking about it tomorrow on Laura Ingraham's radio program, heard nationwide. I'll be on at 11:15 to 11:45 talking about this issue, and we'll have a bit more to say as the story unfolds. You'll also find my article published at the Washington Post and as Newsweek online edition starting tomorrow morning. Back to talk about college in this new context. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back, folks. This is what I'm hearing from a lot of parents and students, college students and especially high school students, and that is, what do we do now? Now, the whole world seems to have changed in the last several weeks financially, at least in terms of the picture for college. And there are an awful lot of, in fact, millions right now, high school seniors trying to figure out what they are going to do. Some of them thought they had the entire package all wrapped up. They knew where they were going to go. They knew what it was going to look like. Everything was underway. Now, however, they are looking at a pretty significant financial challenge. Perhaps it's because of a change in their own family finances. Perhaps it's because of a change in the general economy. Perhaps it's because of a change in the college's finances. Let me tell you some of the news headlines that have been out there lately. You're looking at Harvard University losing $8 billion and more. That's billion with a B in terms of endowment. You're looking at university systems at the state level, looking at huge budget cuts. You are looking at small liberal arts colleges facing the dilemma of having to raise tuition rather substantially at the same time people may be less able to pay that tuition. You've got a lot of folks who decided, because of who I am and what I think I can do and where I believe I ought to go, I want to go to institution A, B, or C, and now you're looking at tuition. Private school, private college tuition is high as $35,000 to $55,000 a year. And then there are others who are just having to have the kind of sit-down conversation between parents and their kids and say, look, we're going to have to rethink this whole equation. We want to help you with college. We want to send you to college, but it's not going to be at that private institution. It's not going to be at that Ivy League institution. It's not going to be at that liberal arts college up in the Northeast or in the Midwest or in California. It's going to be instead at a state college. It may even be starting out at a community college. Well, here's what I want to tell you. First of all, don't panic. As parents, as students, don't panic. Your life is not over. You'll be surprised how many people who are massively successful in life went to schools you've not yet considered. Now, let's just talk turkey for a moment. My first concern in terms of the college choice for Christian parents and Christian students has to do with the content and the worldview of the education before you get to the finances. But the finances right now are a presenting challenge, and that's what we're going to talk about. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I know from the volume of emails, conversations, phone calls, and all the rest, I know from what's been coming into my office, and a lot of people, an awful lot, are trying to think this through. And I think when that's so, it's a good thing for us to talk about it. I think putting it into perspective is a very important thing. I think there's a lot of anxiety out there that is probably misplaced anxiety. So let me name that anxiety. Let's just go ahead and talk about it. Here's a scenario for anxiety. This culture tells us that there is a hierarchy of educational institutions, and there certainly is. At the very top, you've got, look at the U.S. News and World Report kind of rankings. Look at the publicity. Look at the ethos. You're looking at the Ivy League institutions, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Brown, Cornell, Penn, Dartmouth. You go down the list. You start looking at those institutions. Having a degree from Harvard or Yale does make a difference in life. There's no doubt about it. It does. But there are an awful lot of people who are incredibly successful in life who do not have Harvard and Yale degrees. And then you look at other universities. You've got massively influential private universities. You've got everything from, for instance, a college like Colgate University or Stanford University. You start going to Washington University in St. Louis. You're looking at institutions that have considerable cachet. You're looking at other institutions, that University of Richmond, Wake Forest University, that have become kind of a second tier choices for an awful lot of people, and then first tier for others. And those are, I would describe, as formerly Baptist universities that are now, I would classify, far more in a secular mode, and they need to be recognized as such. You have the Vanderbilts and the Emorys, depending on where you are, maybe, you know, that you're looking at UCLA. That's a public university. I meant the University of Southern California, USC. You're looking at universities where they're magnet universities. People say, I want to go there. And then you're looking at the small liberal arts colleges, the Colbys, the Smiths, the Wellesleys. You're looking at an awful lot of school like that that really do pull students who are looking for a liberal arts education. And they are the schools with reputations that make people say, you know, if you go there, you're going to have a step up. You're going to be advantaged, you know, over others. There are the public universities, the giant ones, the University of Michigan's, the Ohio State's, the University of Florida. They're the public Ivies that have incredible scholarly reputations, University of Virginia, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And if you're an out-of-state student trying to get to one of those, it's almost tuition-wise like trying to get into one of these very high-priced liberal arts colleges or one of the prestige private universities. And then there are students who are, of course, going to state universities in the state where they live. And some of them are going to community colleges. And then others are going to Christian universities and Christian colleges where they are making a priority to go to those schools precisely because of the worldview that is represented. All of these can turn out well. That's the amazing thing. All of these can turn out well. Here is a report I hold in my hands. It's published in summary form in the Chronicle of Higher Education. That's like the Wall Street Journal of Higher Education. Here is the headline. Does it matter where you go to college? The subhead reads, a new survey finds that the student experience varies less among institutions than it does for individuals on the same campus. Now, that has my attention. Let me read to you one specific sentence. Listen to this. The average student experience doesn't differ that markedly among institutions. Rather, more than 90% of the variation in educational quality occurs among individual students on the same campus. You hear that? There's a lot of variation in educational quality. But according to this report published in the Chronicle of Higher Education, 90% of the variation is found among students on the same campus. Which is to say that if you do well anywhere, you're likely to do well. If the student devotes herself, himself, anywhere, that student is likely to do well, and not only to do well in college or university, but to do well later in life. The most important thing you can do is do well wherever you go, because doing well then opens the door for you, if you so choose, to go elsewhere. And there are an awful lot of people who, by the way, begin the college experience planning to do one thing and end the college experience planning to do something very different. The average student changes majors at least once, and often more than once. And we're not just talking major from political science to history. We're talking changing major from history to veterinary medicine or the kind of course of study that would allow one to go to that kind of school. That kind of variation is often experienced among people because we're looking at college freshmen entering at about age 18, and there's just a whole lot of decision-making yet to be made at people at that age in life. But if you do well, And if a student studies hard, applies himself, herself very much to studies, does well, establishes a good academic record, a good academic reputation, builds the kind of experience during the college experience that will transfer and be transportable, that student is going to do well. And I look right now as a college and seminary president. I can tell you this seminary right now in the student body has Ivy League graduates, state university graduates. It has graduates who went to Christian schools, Christian colleges, Christian universities. It's got some who went to elite private universities and some who started out at a community college. And some of them will work all the way through to eventually earn a Ph.D. What matters is doing well, and what matters is choosing carefully, and what matters is thinking about the totality of the college experience, which is more determinative than just the question of which college. I'd love to hear from some of you who are thinking about this, some who may have had to rethink the question given the financial concerns. Just give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. We'll be right back.
Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about college choices today. We're doing so really at the request of listeners to this program. Many have written in and said, look, what do you recommend? Yeah, because, you know, generally we talk about this at other times of the year when the issue of college choice, college priority, the kind of content we should be looking for in college education, the kind of concerns we should have, we've generally talked about that at other times of the year. But the financial crisis that is now being experienced by many families, by states with state education budgets, by colleges and universities themselves. These are becoming the catalyst for the need for a conversation right now. And I have had conversations with a parent just the other day, had conversations with a parent about a week ago that I would describe as being near panicked on this. And I just want to suggest that panic is not necessary. It's not called for here. Because as much as you are right to want your child to go to college under almost any conceivable circumstance, the reality is that going to this particular college is generally not as important as it might seem to be. Let me read to you from the Boston Globe this fascinating article. Here's the headline, Downturn Pairing College Dreams. Linda Machan of the Boston Globe writes this, and it's almost stereotypical. You could write this with a byline from almost any town in America of any size. And the kids' names even just sound like the kids that could be just anywhere, born roughly 17 years ago. Here's Chloe Thomas. Chloe herself at the Cambridge Ringe and Latin School is a very, very well-known school in the Boston area. She had been planning to go to, Barnard College or Emory University. But it looked like because of financially constrained times among her family, she may have to go to the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. This is what she says, quote, I've never been into going to UMass. I just didn't see myself there. It didn't feel like me, end quote. Well, it turns out that Chloe, who didn't feel like she was the University of Massachusetts, ran a computer program that was available through her school, an online financial aid, calculating how much assistance she's going to get. And as the Boston Globe reports, she quickly recalibrated. I guess you might say she sees herself now at the University of Massachusetts. By the way, this news article from the Boston Globe says that the University of Massachusetts, especially UMass Amherst, has become now a very hot destination. It's because if you live in Massachusetts, you're going to pay in-state tuition. You can go to a very good university and get a very good education and end up with a very good degree. And you're going to pay a fraction of what you would pay if you go to a lot of private colleges and universities. And that was Chloe. Zoe is also in here. Zoe Krause, who's a senior at Newton South High School in the Boston area. She says that her parents really, quote, try to keep finances from my brother and me. The issue of money becomes a quiet, neutral zone, end quote. I think a lot of parents who probably deal with their kids that way. Let me suggest that part of that is probably right. Part of that is probably not helpful to your kids in helping them to grow up and think financially themselves. But, however, it was Chloe. And this is another girl whose sister is going to Smith College. She thought she might go to a similar prestigious liberal arts college, but oh well, she said that one's a little pricey. Going back to Chloe for a minute and Zoe. In this case, Zoe's having to make her recalibration. So is Chloe. So it looks like these girls are certainly having to rethink the college issue because of their parents' situation. But there are others that could be in the other part of this story, especially here you've got a young man, Andrew, says he wants to become a music teacher. He's been to a college where he's had a music camp twice. He wants to go there. However, it looks really, really expensive. That's where he wanted to go. The college he wanted to attend, and that, by the way, is Ithaca College. It's now looking at $40,000 a year in tuition, $41,000. He now realizes his parents aren't going to be able to pull that off, and so he, too, is looking at UMass Amherst. He says it's definitely the top of the list now. Now, this is a secular news report on families in the Boston area. I just had to chuckle when I read this, not because it's particularly humorous. It's just it is, nonetheless, interesting to hear these kids talk about making these decisions. They sound like 17- and 18-year-olds. But they also sound like 17- and 18-year-olds that are beginning to understand some reality. And this is a generation of high school seniors that may have an experience different than those who graduated just 1 or 2 years earlier. because the financial situation has changed. But it might be reaching those older siblings as well, because decisions that seemed right a year ago might not seem right now, at least in terms of finances. Right now, private college tuition is pegged at likely increases of double digits for next year. It's already high, could be looking at 10 to 20, maybe even 25% in some schools really facing financial challenges. State universities, it may go up, but it's a lot less. Community college might become an option for some. I'm going to come back and talk about some principles that I hope might help parents and students in thinking through this issue. Just take a baby aspirin and realize this is not a catastrophe when it comes to college. Your student can still do very, very well. We'll talk about that when we come right back.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Let me just talk a little common sense, I hope, but also perhaps with a voice of experience coming from one who serves as a college and seminary president, graduate school. Let me just offer a couple words of warning. Maybe the negative stuff needs to come first. There are an awful lot of people right now who bought homes, and they have big mortgages, and their problem is that the mortgage is underwater, which is to say that the mortgage is for an amount larger than the current resale value of the house. And that's a bad financial situation. Anyone who knows real estate knows you don't want a mortgage that's underwater. That just makes sense. Well, there are an awful lot of college and university graduates who have underwater educations. I want to tell you how that looks. It looks like this. They graduate with multiple tens of thousands of educational debt, and they all think they can pay that off. But that is a very, very dangerous way to begin a young professional life, a young married life. It's very, very difficult. I face young people every single day who are coming to study at my school, and I'm so thankful they're coming. But some of them are coming with as much as $50,000 or $60,000, and I've known of a couple that have had even more in educational, legitimate educational debt. That doesn't mean stereo systems and cars. That means tuition at some college or university where they were absolutely certain they needed to go. And I just want to tell you, that is an incredible problem. So that is my warning. The other warning is don't measure your self-worth or your child's self-worth on the peer evaluation and the public evaluation of an educational choice. There's a lot of cachet out there in schools. You say Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, USC. You say some of these schools. In the Christian world, you say Wheaton, you know, Biola. You instantly say something, and then people say, I just have to go there. And I'm just going to argue that that is not necessarily at all the case. So let me just offer you a few principles. Number one, make the decision. Parents and students together, make the decision that is right for your family. That's right. Not just for the student, for the family. The family is the unit of meaning here. And most families are going to have perhaps more than one child that may, in a very short amount of time, be involved in college or just out of college or headed to college. And if the wrong decision is made financially, it can ricochet through the rest of the family. It can put the entire family under incredible hardship. You know, the college years are likely to be something of a financial strain. A strain is one thing. A catastrophe is something else. Second, as you make the right decision for your family, if especially, and I'm speaking to you who are Christian parents, if you are Christian parents, make the decision based upon values before value, which is to say about the belief system and the worldview before you ever get to the economic equation of a cost-benefit analysis. You need to be very, very comfortable with the choice in terms of the lifestyle on the campus, in terms of the kind of structure the school is going to offer, in terms of the cognitive worldview commitments represented by the school. That's very, very important. That's more important than anything financial. Third, recognize that doing well is the biggest issue, regardless of where you are. Doing well. If you do well at a community college, then you're likely to be able to have an open door to go to a four-year college. And if you do well there, you're going to be able to go on and do something else. Is it easier to go to medical school or law school directly out of a four-year prestigious college or university? You bet. You bet. But you know what? More and more, this is the case. It simply comes down to scores, grades and scores. You do well where you are. That's the most important thing to opening the door. Of course, as Christians, we know we're to do well simply because, to the glory of God, we're to do our very best. Next point, where you go is far less important than how you do in terms of doing well, and I'm going to argue this, where you go to church when you're there. In terms of the formation of the person, the formation of the mind, the formation of the soul, I would be far more concerned with where a student is going to be deeply involved in a gospel Bible teaching church and be accountable in terms of growing in grace as much as growing in intellect and growing in academic knowledge and growing in subject discernment and growing in, the kind of library and book learning and all that. Hear me speak as a college president. That's very important, but it is not ultimate. The soul is far more important. And the soul and the brain are, that's even a false distinction in one sense. Let me just say this, that spiritually and intellectually, there needs to be growth together. And that's going to be very important upon the decision made about the local church. I'll tell you this right now. I would far rather, and hear me say this, I would far rather that a student go to a secular university and during those years be deeply involved in a gospel church than for them to go to a Christian university and be uninvolved in a church. I think that's just deadly dangerous. The fourth thing I want to suggest is there are real options in terms of Christian education. Christian colleges are in the same financial situation as everyone else. But there are some really strong schools out there that are doing very good work. Those of you who've heard me, talk on this program, I've talked about schools like Union University in Jackson, Tennessee, North Greenville College in South Carolina, the University of Mobile. There are many schools, and the problem with naming any is you can't name all you'd like to name. They're doing a good job that way. And so there are folks that are really trying to offer genuine value. And, here's the other thing. If you look at a lot of the families, and I'm going to go back to point number one, make the family the unit of meaning far more than just the student, because the student's really a part of a family, not a standalone consumer. You look at the families that are represented in these schools, and that'll give you a pretty good idea of what it looks like. And if they can do it, you can do it. But remember, the financial situation is such you should not put yourselves deeply in debt, and the student should not be put deeply in debt into college, because that, far more than the decision about where to go, is likely to be a real constraint upon future choices, especially choices that are gospel-informed, to go to the mission field, to be able to go into the ministry and be able to serve a small church as pastor, to be able to go and be a medical doctor in a small community that is desperately in need of a physician. You're not going to be able to do that if you have crushing educational debt. That's just bad news all around. Let's go to Syracuse, New York. Marty's listening. Go ahead, Marty.
I think what's also more important than the school you go to is how you perform in the first two jobs out of college. Because if you perform well in your first two jobs, you're going to then be in position to get a much better job after that.
That's a very good point, Marty. And let me just give you an example of a way to think that through. Not that this is the be-all and end-all, but look at the United States Congress. I mean, there you have 435 members of the House of Representatives. Okay, look there. If you look at something like the Almanac of American Politics and look where they went to school, you're going to find the Harvards and the Yales, the Princetons and other Ivy League schools, Stanford and all the rest. Any likelihood in any given year, you're going to find that with any given Congress. But you'll be surprised. You're going to find a lot of University of Illinois, Middle Tennessee State University, University of Central Florida. You're going to find an awful lot of things like that. And you're going to find Christian colleges and small colleges. You're going to find community colleges where some people got started and work their way up. Marty's right. Performance, discipline, actually hard work is what accounts for what people are looking for in opening doors, in hiring, and in other priorities that people generally are looking for when they go to college in the first place. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Feel free to write us about this. You may have a suggestion, may have a question. We're always glad to hear from you at mail@albertmueller.com. When it comes to the college decision, that's an issue in which I would suggest what I always suggest, and that is that Christian parents and Christian students should look to the local church as a place to have a good conversation. What have other people found in terms of experience? Where have other people gone? Just in the last couple of minutes, I've had schools mentioned, good schools like Covenant College, Grove City College. There are a lot of colleges you might not even know about. You may not have heard about them, but you'll have the opportunity to talk about them and perhaps to hear about them from someone who can say, I went there, here's what it looks like. Talk about how you actually pay for this. And I think it's good for Christian parents to talk about that. Talk about what you'll have to do without in order to get this done, and then make a reasonable decision. I think the most important thing, other than the worldview issues you can deal with, goes back to the point I want to make again and again, which is this is a family decision. And thus, you know, if you really start looking at where people get the idea they have to go to a certain college, let me just warn you, parents, sometimes you fuel that. Sometimes you say, you know, if you study really hard, you can go to this school, you can get in here. You imply that if you get in here, that's going to lead to success in life. And then let's say your student does this, and then you get to the point you realize, we're not going to be able to afford this. Finances are a major matter, especially in a time when a financial downturn leads not only to changes in a family's economy, but also in the finances of higher education. Make a family decision and then realize, again, the second most important thing I can say in this program today is that 90%, and here again, I'm quoting from the Chronicle of Higher Education. It's a study. It's known as NESE, the National Survey of Student Engagement. It says this, more than 90% of the variation in educational quality occurs among individual students on the same campus. You go to any school and do well, you're likely to do well. And that's likely to gain for you a good education and a good educational experience and the ability to transport that to other purposes and goals in life. Folks, I'd love to hear from you on this. And there's one purpose I had in doing the program today. It was to say to Christian parents, we need to think as Christians here about our children and realize that it's about the totality of their formation, not just their education. Education's important. And please hear me to say that. I'm a college and university, seminary president. This is very much a matter of my life's calling. But education is a part of life. It is a part of building a human being into what we hope, to the glory of God, they will be as they maximize who they are in service to the gospel of Christ. The issue there is not so much where you go, but what you do when you get there. And the where you go is probably a much easier question once you start, breaking it down to what it really means and represents for you. Back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. We'll talk about what's on your mind. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.